This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have you here. On this show, we cover the stories the corporate media ignores, and we have a very busy show for you on this Thursday. We're going to look at how the economy is really in trouble, but the Biden administration is telling us that, of course, everything is fine, that Bidenomics is helping all Americans. They're citing new job numbers. But what's behind those job numbers? What's actually happening in this economy? Wait till you hear the mortgage numbers. Specifically, where we could see interest rates go for mortgages coming up. Peter Schiff is going to be joining us to talk about the latest on the economy.
Plus, we have an update with the war in Ukraine with increased attacks by the Donbas. Now, U.S. officials are saying they don't really like how Ukraine is running this. They think they're doing some dirty business, but they're still going to support them. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And election day is tomorrow. So the reason these attacks, of course, are happening, stepped up attacks in the Donbas and Donetsk and Luhansk and all of those areas right now, is because elections kick off tomorrow.
Plus, we have Carol Roth, who's going to join us and talk about her new book, You Will Own Nothing, and specifically what we can do as globalists continue to take away power. She, again, says, if you own nothing, they own you. So how can you own control of your life? How can you keep control of your life? Plus, an update on lab-grown meat. Now scientists want to grow fruit, lab-grown fruit. There's a lot of questions. We could put Bill Gates, preservative spray on this lab-grown fruit. And then could we even call that food? All that and more as Redacted starts right now.
All right, welcome into the big show. Hey, I want a point of order here because we have a big documentary that's about to roll out tomorrow here on Redacted, and we want to tell you all about it. It's our Redacted Presents, a brand new documentary on Rumble exclusively. So you need to come over to Rumble and subscribe there to be able to watch the launch of our brand new documentary on 9/11. And the 9/11 attacks specifically, and the anthrax attacks, and the truth around 9/11. David, what time will it premiere tomorrow on Friday?
Yeah, it's going to premiere at 1 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern.
Okay, 4 o'clock Eastern. 4 o'clock Eastern.
So the time that we are normally here, our live show, it will be this program instead of us here on a live show. And again, it has to be on Rumble for reasons that we should not have to specify. And we're excited to bring it to Rumble so that we know that that is a platform where it is welcomed.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. An amazing documentary. And it is going to be censored when we release it on YouTube eventually next week. However, it will be censored. There are things we had to cut out of the documentary because YouTube will not allow us to show those things. So it will debut officially on Rumble tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So please make sure you're subscribed.
And go ahead. I want to point something out as well. Like, I saw a lot of comments on the, like, when we posted the trailer and stuff of, we don't, people don't even think Rumble will allow this. But not only is Rumble allowing this documentary, they helped us promote it. So yeah, it's just a testament to how
we've been working with Rumble on this. Yeah, we've had multiple meetings with Rumble on this to exclusively bring it to Rumble. So not only, yeah, to your point, not only are they going to allow it, they're promoting it. So you're right about that.
It's so interesting that we're all so programmed what we can and cannot say in the year 2023. Who would have thought we got here? But we say what we want on our newsletter. We want to tell you about that before we get started with the news. You can go on over to redacted.inc, sign up for a free daily newsletter. It is a summary of a lot of the stories that we talk about here with links to the original sources, plus more, because we do about four or five stories in the live show and more stories in the newsletter. For instance, today in researching the Hunter Biden possible indictment, it was really hard to find those court filings. The mainstream media doesn't seem like they want you to see original links to those. They just want you to see their take on it. We don't feel like that. We want you to read for yourself, think for yourself. You know, you don't always have to agree with our take on stories. Absolutely not. We're here to have a conversation, make sense of the world together. You know, the world, it makes little sense, feels scary these days, but we have each other. So it feels better to have a community of people who are interested in making themselves educated. And that's what you can do. You can find at the Redacted newsletter. Again, it's free. So go head on over and sign up at redacted.inc.
Well, the Biden administration this week saying there's nothing to see here, no problems. Bidenomics is absolutely working. Inflation is coming down. Janet Yellen recently saying the banking system is fine. Yet we're hitting $34 trillion in debt. We are now paying trillions of dollars just on the interest payments alone on the debt. How exactly is that sustainable? And is everything fine? Nothing to see here. Let's ask Peter Schiff. I've been wanting to get Peter on the show for a very, very long time. We reference him often. It's an honor to have Peter Schiff here, who is the senior economist in, at Asset Management at Euro Pacific Asset Management. Peter, great to have you here on the show finally.
Clayton, great to be here. And first of all, when Joe Biden is out there talking about how inflation is coming down, first of all, he needs to accept some responsibility for how much it went up, number one.
Right.
But number two, the main reason that we saw that big drop in headline CPI, where it got from 9% to 4%. And by the way, 9 wasn't 9. It was actually 18. If you measure inflation the way they measured it back in the 1970s, if you took the same CPI that was used back then and used it now, the actual price increases are double. So we didn't really go from 9 to 3. We went from 18 to 6. But the reason that happened was because we got a 50% drop in the price of oil. That's what really pulled down the headline number. And the reason that oil prices collapsed was because Biden decided to raid the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and right. dumped oil on the market. That reserve is now at an all-time record low as far as how much supply. We have 20 days supply left. The absolute level of the crude in the reserve now is the lowest since in 40 years, even though our population is 50% higher than it was 40 years ago. So we've really tapped that out. Now that we're no longer dumping as much oil, the price is up 40% in the last 3 months or so. We're almost back at $90 a barrel. So all that progress is about to be reversed in the headline CPI. Meanwhile, the core, which excludes food and energy, never really came down. And now it's headed back up. So this myth that the inflation problem is over is wrong. It's just getting started.
That's the fear. I mean, so this is just getting started. People are thinking, well, we're heading into some good times now. I don't know where they're seeing the good times with mortgage, with interest rates where they are, with the demand for mortgages hitting a ridiculously low number, the Fed continuing to push this idea of printing more money. We're continuing to print more money. Now we're moving towards a central bank digital currency. I don't see how it's, I don't know what they're talking about, well, that we are in a good period right now.
This is all spin, right? This is BS. This is what politicians do. But if you look at the actual facts, first of all, yeah, mortgages are now about 7.5%. They're going to go to 8% before the end of the year, probably. But by next year, they could be back at double digits. But, you know, they were down in the 3s. So home prices are completely unaffordable. at this time based on where mortgage rates are. The only reason people could afford these high prices in the past, in the recent past, was because mortgage rates were so low. Credit card debt is at a record high, but credit card interest rates are also at a record high. People are paying more than 20% interest on their credit cards. So people are struggling with debt service, plus prices are rising. That's why so many people now are moonlighting. You have a record number of Americans who are holding down multiple full-time jobs, and you also have record numbers of Americans that have second jobs and third jobs. Why are Americans working so many jobs? It's because that's the only way they can pay the bills. People don't want to have three jobs. They want one job, but unfortunately, they can't get by on one job anymore, so they need to have all these other jobs. Meanwhile, Biden is bragging about all these jobs he's creating. People don't want these jobs. They'd rather not need them. You know, we're creating jobs for people who already have jobs, but we still have an army of people who aren't even in the workforce because they're living off of a government check. And so the people who are paying taxes have to work that much harder so that the people who aren't working can continue to consume without producing.
And so inflation will continue to go up. I mean, for the average consumer right now, for the average person watching our show, who is struggling to put food on the table, the bills for their average, you know, thing of bananas, their food, their steaks that they're buying for their family, the food that they're trying to provide is now double, triple in costs. And to your point, the US dollar has dropped dramatically in value, so they're having to get multiple jobs to cover this difference now. The rents have gone up, right, and they can't afford it. So what happens now to the average consumer? Where's the bottom?
Yeah, and the dollar is losing purchasing power here at home, but on international exchange markets, the dollar has still been strong relative to the euro or the yen or the pound. But of course, those currencies are also losing purchasing power because inflation is happening in those countries as well. Now, U.S. politicians try to say, you see, this proves it's not our fault because inflation is a global problem. No, all the politicians and the central bankers made the same mistakes. They all had interest rates down at zero. Europe even had them negative. Everybody was doing QE. That's why everybody is suffering from inflation. Inflation is the tax that we're paying to cover all of the government spending. But what I've been advising people to do for years is to stock up on food now, because why put your money in the bank where it's going to depreciate and earn no interest? Just think about the things you might buy next year or 2 years from now that won't go bad, and just buy them now. I mean, that's better than leaving your money in the bank. And by the way, all the banks in America are insolvent. The U.S. Federal Reserve is propping them up. We began what would have been a much worse financial crisis months ago when you had Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank and these other banks fail. The reason they failed was because they loaded up on government bonds and mortgages when interest rates were really low. And then when interest rates rose and depositors wanted their money back, the banks didn't have it because they had loaned it out to the government and on these mortgages, and the mortgages and government bonds lost value. And so the banks, you know, were insolvent. And so the Fed bailed them out. But all the banks have done the same thing. I mean, think about years and years and years. All these Americans went out there and refinanced their mortgages at 3%, 3.5%. And now the banks own those mortgages, but their cost of money is now over 5%. You know, when interest rates were zero, the banks were making a lot of money on those 3% mortgages. When interest rates are 5.5%, they're losing a fortune. So they're all bankrupt. And if the Fed continues to hike rates to keep fighting inflation, or even leaves rates where they are and doesn't cut them, all the big banks that we bailed out following the 2008 financial crisis, every one of them is going to fail.
Every one of them is going to fail. What does that mean?
Yes,
for
all those big banks without the government bailing them out.
So where will people put their money? I mean, I think if we've been talking about this for months on the show, especially after Silicon Valley Bank, it's, you know, you go to get money if you go to get money out of the bank doesn't have your money in the first place. I mean, it's a joke that the bank is actually
holding. Oh, it's all loaned out.
Yeah, it's all loaned out. So what are people going to do with their money if they have some savings? Would you advise people to take out what cash they can now and store it locally, turn it to gold? What would you do? Buy food?
Well, yeah. there's no reason to leave your money in a bank. I mean, at a minimum, you should pull it out and put it in a money market fund somewhere because you can earn over 5%. The banks can't afford to pay you because they're losing too much money. And that's also a problem for banks because everybody wants to take out their money. And so their whole businesses are imploding. But it doesn't make any sense to leave money in a bank for other reasons, because number one, inflation is going to erode away the value of whatever you leave there.
Right.
And you have two possibilities. Your bank is going to fail and you might lose the money, even if it's insured by the FDIC. The FDIC is broke.
Right.
And so it's possible that all these banks fail and there's no bailouts because the FDIC is bankrupt. So either your bank fails and you could lose your money, or your bank doesn't fail because the Fed bails everybody out by printing money. But in that case, the value of your deposits collapse. And so you lose to inflation. So either way, you're guaranteed to lose if you keep your money in the bank. So why not pull it out, at least the money you don't need for short term to pay your bills, and then do something else with it. One thing you can do is buy gold and silver. And then what I do with most of my clients is I manage their portfolios, because we don't keep all of our money in gold and silver because they don't generate any income. I like to buy dividend paying stocks outside the United States, where the stocks are paying dividends of 6, 7, 8, 9%, where these dividends are derived by selling goods and services around the world that consumers need, not the ones they're going to give up because they don't have any money anymore, but the stuff that they have to buy, no matter what the price is. Maybe they'll buy a little less, but they have to buy it. There are some things that are discretionary that you don't need, that you only buy those things after you pay for your food, after you pay for your energy and your rent and your insurance. So we don't kind of invest in those businesses because they're in a lot of trouble, because the consumer's in a lot of trouble. So you got to buy value. You got to get out of the U.S. You got to be thinking about inflation. Inflation is a tax, right? It's how the government funds the deficits. All this stuff that Obama is promising the voters, it all costs something. And if he's not going to raise taxes, he's going to raise inflation. And so every time you go to the supermarket and prices are so much higher than when you were there before, that difference is actually a tax. That's how we're paying for this. So when Biden says that, well, we're not going to tax anybody who makes under $400,000, that's a lie, because almost everything he's spending is being paid for by the people who make under $400,000, because they are disproportionately impacted by the inflation tax, because they spend almost everything they earn and then some, so they hit that tax. But if you're an investor and you don't want to pay the inflation tax, you got to get out of the thing that's being taxed, which are your U.S. dollars, your U.S. Treasury bonds, your municipal bonds, your corporate bonds. Anything that's dollar denominated is subject to the U.S. inflation tax. So I want to avoid that tax by avoiding U.S. dollar assets. And that's what we're helping our clients do, you know, at Euro Pacific Asset Management.
I'll get you out of here on this, Peter, which is where inflation goes over the next 6 months, a year from now to 2 years. Where do you see the long road of inflation going? Maybe a number projection and what people might expect in this economy.
Well, it's got no place to go but up. And first of all, you have to understand what inflation is. Inflation is an expansion of the money supply. That's literally what's being inflated. That's where the word comes from. Inflate means to expand. So what are you expanding? Because you don't expand a price. Prices go up, they go down, but they don't expand. It's the money supply that expands. And if you get an old dictionary, a Webster's dictionary, and you look up the word inflation, it will say an expansion of the money supply. That's what it is. Now, what happens when you expand the money supply is that prices go up. So rising prices result from inflation. They are not inflation. They do not cause inflation. They are caused by inflation. Now, who expands the money supply? The Federal Reserve. Why does it do that? To finance government debt. So it's government deficits that are the drivers behind inflation. Now, the deficits right now are over $2 trillion a year. We've never had anything like that outside of a recession. In fact, even in normal recessions, we don't have deficits this high. We're running $2 trillion deficits. They're going to be $3 trillion by this time next year, even if we don't have a recession. But if we do have a recession, which is more likely, these deficits are going to rise to $4, $5 trillion a year. Where's that money going to come from? It's all going to be printed by the Fed. Inflation is going to get so much worse because it's the only politically expedient way out, because otherwise they have to slash spending. They're going to have to cut Medicare, cut Social Security, cut defense, cut government pensions, massive cuts to spending. None of these politicians want to do that. They also don't want to pass huge middle class tax hikes. They don't want to impose a national sales tax. They don't want to raise the payroll tax. So the only way they can get away with this is by raising the inflation tax. So they're going to print way more money, and that means prices are going to go up even faster. And the reason that the politicians like to lie and pretend that inflation is rising prices is because they want to blame somebody else for the inflation. So when oil prices go up, they can blame Putin, or they can blame OPEC, or they can blame greedy businesses that are gouging their customers. But if they properly define inflation as an increase in the money supply, they can't blame anybody but themselves, because Putin doesn't increase our money supply. You know, some U.S. corporation can't increase our money supply. Only we can do that. So inflation is homegrown, and the rest of the world is simply reacting to the inflation that we export.
Troubled times ahead. Absolutely the case. And I'm glad to hear what you've been saying about this and how people can protect themselves. We've been trying to echo a lot of these same pieces of advice here on the show for many, many months. Peter Schiff, thank you so much. It's been a long time. Glad to have you. Hope you won't be a stranger. And we hope that you're able to come on the show more regularly.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Clayton. Anytime. Happy to be a guest.
And thanks so much, Peter. I mean, so bottom line, right now, inflation is going to continue to be hot. That means the cost of things is going to continue to go up. Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing gas prices at $90 right now for a barrel. Could hit about $100. Let me know in the chat right now where you guys are watching us from. How much are you paying for gas right now? My mom. Go ahead.
Here in Southern Washington, like the Portland metro area, we have some of the highest in the nation at like $5.30.
Whoa. Oh my gosh. Jeez. For 1 gallon.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's cost me about $100 to fill my tank right now.
Jeez. And if you think about, well, what he said too, we covered this a few weeks ago here on the show, but now we're getting more data about this idea that just to cover the debt, the interest payments on the United States government's debt, $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Just the interest payments alone is unbelievable. So how is it sustainable? How are they going to get us out of this? And the only way they can get us out of it, is to his point, is to continue to inflate the money supply in order to devalue the currency. So the writing is on the wall for the US dollar. And now you're seeing this expanded BRICS, these expanded BRICS nations, and having a currency that's backed by tangible assets like gold and silver and commodities, oil and natural gas and things. Someone in the chat earlier asked, hey, Clayton, like, how can I convert British pounds into tangible assets?
Well, we're going to talk to Carol Roth about that coming up, because in her book, she talks about owning things such as land, precious metals, things that you understand, right? Holding on to things. And it seems like this is the economy that we're looking for.
They want you to own nothing.
And another thing that, you know, I do every day is I use XC.com, and they're not a sponsor of the show, but I get daily alerts for currencies around the world and where the US dollar can buy, euro, metals, whatever it is, you know, start just tracking those things so that you know the value of your dollar or your pound or your euro, because these things will take you by surprise and you'll be like, oh, we're not the global power. How come this, you know, it's just good to know what are the general exchange rates. For instance, today, $1 buys about 0.9493 euro. So these are things that just, like, it's time to know this stuff.
And we don't have financial education in the United States at all. They don't want you to know it. They don't teach it to you at all. Let me know in the chat, how many of you were taught the difference between assets and liabilities in high school? All I learned in high school was how to balance a checkbook. That was the only class that I had. I was once talking to Bill Hemmer, one of my co-hosts years ago at Fox News, and he pulled me aside in the hallway, and we were talking about this on the air, and he said, I never learned any of this. He said, they never taught any of this to us in school, financial education. And so they want to keep people dumb. They want to keep you not knowing this stuff. Go ahead, David.
I was going to say, I took a class in high school called Home Ec. Home economics.
Yeah.
And we learned how to make Care Bears. We learned how to sew. We learned how to, like, you know, make
Care
food.
Bears.
Yeah.
Like, we learned, Yeah, we literally made Care Bears, like our own Care Bear. I made a Ghostbuster bear with the Ghostbuster logo on it.
I made a pillow in home ec.
I learned in home ec. Yeah,
in home. I made blueberry muffins.
And I also learned how to cook. And so I actually loved that class. It was a group of us guys against the girls, and we crushed them in cooking.
We learned nothing about the economy or economics.
No,
nothing.
No, nothing about finance at all. It's really sad. And this is how they keep you stupid about the money supply and about the economic system.
There are so many ways. This is just one of many. We're going to talk to Carol Roth again about student loans, about ESGs, about all kinds of ways that the government is just working against us, specifically these governments that call themselves capitalistic. It's all right for some. And, you know, they want to sort of sweep the rug under from everybody else. And so we will talk about that. But while we're talking about home economics, it's a good time to talk about HelloFresh, because it's fall. Kids are back to school. Now is the time to revamp your meal planning. A good way to do that is with HelloFresh, because you get farm fresh pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. You can skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. So, you know, when you're going through your week and you're thinking, okay, which day is what? How are we gonna, you know, get this or that? This is a great time to make sure that you've got HelloFresh in your meal planning, because they include 40 recipes and over 100 add-on items to choose from every week. Ever wish that you can spend less time planning, shopping, and cooking for the family? This is how, because you choose the meals, you get all the ingredients, takes the guesswork out of it. HelloFresh is more than just dinners. You can also stock your fridge with easy breakfasts, quick lunches, and fresh snacks. Just shop HelloFresh Market and add any of these tasty, time-saving solutions to your weekly box. Another awesome tip is that if you, say, are a family of four, you can order meals for more than that amount and then save them for your kids' lunches the next day. They could take it to school. That's another, you know, pro tip from one busy meal planning mom to another. So go to HelloFresh.com/50redacted and use code 50redacted, and with that you'll get 50% off plus 15% off the next 2 months as well. So you'll get 50% off that order you make and 15% off for the next 2 months. So again, that's HelloFresh.com/50redacted. Use code 50redacted for 50% off. That is HelloFresh. They are America's number one meal kit.
Grover is excited about it. What the hell he's doing? That's our little mini pincher. I don't know what's going on down there, but he should know to be quiet during showtime. But for some reason, he's a little riled up right now. So we apologize. Someone in the chat just said, learned about economics in college a little bit, but that's about it. That's about it. Just so some economics in college, but not much else.
Yeah, but I never had to. Like in college, I never took any economics. I've never taken an economics class in my life. I've never had to. It's never been offered. I mean, I guess I could have majored in economics, but I didn't. So,
you know,
as
something
a biology major.
Something that Carol Roth talks about in her book about, you know, we charge these high fees for education, and a lot of things that is in these high fees is increasingly administrative costs, because these colleges now feel like they need a diversity director or what have you. So the increasing costs of college actually don't cover increasing salaries for professors. It's usually bloated administration.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're not really getting an education or even a better one than before. You're getting accreditation. But most of these schools put their programming online. So if you want to educate yourself, you absolutely can. It's available to everyone. So, you know, this is something that you can easily do if you want to pick up books, but we're not pointed in that direction. So anyway.
Not at all. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this. Voting starts tomorrow in Donetsk, and these are the first elections in what is now considered Russia, and the elections will go through Sunday. And of course, this was formerly Eastern Ukraine, and in Donetsk and Luhansk and Zaporozhye and all of that entire region. Of course, we show you the map on a regular basis. That entire area, of course, voted overwhelmingly to become part of Russia, and they are going to have elections for the very first time as Russia going through Sunday. So, of course, Russia absolutely would want to bomb their own people right before an election, right? makes a lot of sense. Like, these people just voted to become part of your country, so let's bomb them. Russia would love to do that, right? Well, that's what the dipshits in the Western media would have you believe. Just as Antony Blinken shows up, touches down in the capital of Ukraine, a missile destroys a Russian market with people going about their day, buying goods and going shopping in Russia. A missile hits. Watch. Yeah. 17 people killed, more than 30 people hurt. All of the Western media immediately blamed it on Russia. Just take a look. Here are just some headlines here. These are YouTube videos. Look at these idiots. CCTV captures the moment Russian missile strikes market in Donetsk. Deadly Russian missile hits Ukrainian city. Russian attacks crowded Ukraine. All of these, that's just one example. Here's the Associated Press. Russian missile strikes Ukrainian market. Well, it's not a Ukrainian, it's a Russian market. Kills 17 people as Blinken announces a new $1 billion aid package. Oh, the timing is amazing, isn't it? Russian strike on crowded Ukraine market leaves 17 dead. Russian strike on it. But you're not stupid. You people who watch this show are not stupid. You know exactly where this came from. In fact, a frame-by-frame analysis, eyewitness reports, and even Ukrainian journalists are now admitting that, no, this came from Ukraine. So, yeah, way to get out that story there, Western media, and jump the gun on this. In fact, this afternoon, a pro-Ukrainian news outlet, Conflict Intelligence Team, admits that it analyzed missile trajectory and confirmed it flew from the northwest, which is Ukrainian-controlled territory. Witnesses also, you can see in the video and in a frame-by-frame analysis, were looking up in the direction of Ukraine where this was coming from Ukrainian-controlled territory where it was fired. Also, this town is Russia. So we sent journalist Patrick Lancaster to Donetsk today, just hours before voting is set to take place tomorrow, to interview the witnesses who watched these attacks unfold. Watch.
I'm Patrick Lancaster. This is a special update from Donetsk for Redacted. Right now, we're in the Kievsky district of Donetsk, and there has been an attack here today. We see some shrapnel pieces here on the ground. It's been about an hour and a half since this attack happened, and we can hear shelling still right now. But there's several attacks across Donetsk today. A report of a few people injured. We're going to be seeing what we can here on the ground, but now we see some shrapnel, and we're going to bring you as much as we can. Здравствуйте. Можно? Что произошло?
Град прилетел.
Да? Когда это был?
Так, пару часов назад.
Ага. Откуда?
С Авдеевки, откуда? Он полдома снесло, и вот он упал.
Ага. И девка это украинская страна, да?
Конечно.
Ага. И как ты думал, почему украинский стреляет здесь, на твоего дома?
Я не знаю почему. Вот 15 июня через 10 метров вот сюда упало за этот забор. 10 метров расстояния. Они стреляют в одни и те же точки.
Ага. Военный объект здесь?
Какой военный объект? Здесь не все жилые дома. Это, ну, здесь дети живут, он в подвалах. Ну, какие военные объекты? Здесь вообще никого нет. Ага.
Какой адрес?
Куинджи 2Б. Улица, ага. Куинджи 2Б.
Как зовут?
Николай.
Все, извините. So, принцип, это страна туда и просто попал,
вот.
Да?
Вот так до аэропорта, вот так вот, 2.5 километра.
Ага,
до
и на другой страна Авдеевка, да? Стороне,
да, до Водина 4.5 километра, ну, близко живем.
Ага. Вопрос, как вас жить, как это? Вы только здесь 10 минут, мы слышал много обстрелов. Как жить, как это?
Ну, страшно. Страшно жить. Привыкать. 9 лет уже так живем.
Это каждый день?
Да.
Да.
I'd just like to know, what do you have to say to the people in the West that are paying and supplying these weapons to bomb you.
Что вы могу сказать людям на Западе, которые...
Будь стоп выпан с той Украины.
I mean, look at them. Do they look like military targets? They look like normal people, like anywhere in the world. They even
There's
dress
no
like
army.
Australian.
Only children live there. No military there.
Mm-hmm. I've been here 1 month. I still haven't seen a military target, you know, personally. Thank you very much. God bless.
Да, тут слава Богу. Все под Богом ходят.
Можем мы верить твоей крыше?
Пойдем.
Свет включать не буду.
Взрыв был там, взрыв был на крыше.
Он зацепил крышу и потом в забор один заглядел.
One second. Что это был грил сегодня, да?
Сегодня три машины пожарная приезжала, тушила. Пацаны, красавцы, МЧС, наша четверка. Красавцы. Вон Авдеев, вон там. Вот он, как он летел. Все четко, понятно, откуда. Говорю, вот. Там Авдеевка, а здесь жилые дома, это поселок Третьевосточный, здесь нету военных объектов, ну никаких абсолютно, здесь люди, вот.
All right, so we'll show you what we can here. And you see how this just the day before the Russian election start for the first time here in Donetsk. And of course, Lugansk, Zaporozhye, and Kherson, the other regions that by Russian law is considered part of Russia. Regardless of what Ukraine and the West says, by Russian law, these regions are considered part of Russia. And every day there has been civilians injured here in Donetsk and Lugansk and the other regions. Just yesterday, here in the city of Donetsk, there's a reported 10 civilians injured, one killed, and many homes and apartments damaged. We're just here today. I just got back to Donetsk this morning, and we're here showing you what we can here on the ground. So we're going to move forward and keep bringing you all of the important news here on the ground in Donetsk and beyond. And of course, we're going to be showing you what's going on with the first Russian elections here in Donetsk. So this has been a special update for Redacted. We're moving on.
All right. Thanks, Patrick. So there you go. So elections starting tomorrow. We will be covering it here on the show and see what happens there. But the timing is amazing. Anthony Blinken arrives. They launch by all accounts could have been HIMARS attacks right into these areas to try to drum up support, paint it as a Russian attack, or use these false flag attacks in order to get more money, to get more weapons, and to continue, it wasn't enough that he had to walk through graveyards. We need to do this too, and attack these civilians. Go ahead, Phil.
Well, that's how you win the hearts and minds of the people that you want to come back to your country, right? Is you bomb them.
Yeah.
It's like, right. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's awful. Well, we have more news to get to. Now that we've seen that, it's hard to shake off the image of that man saying, children live here. Don't send them any more weapons. We don't want to live like this.
He's making a plea to the West because the Western media won't cover it.
Right.
He's telling Western, Anthony Blinken's there. Please stop sending weapons. This is what it's doing. It's killing people.
No more weapons to Ukraine, he says. And this is the area that's being bombed. So... we're going to talk to you about globalist plans. We're going to talk to Carol Roth about her new book, You Will Own Nothing, plus updated story about how New Zealand taxpayers are funding a project to grow fruit, lab-grown fruit. You've heard about lab-grown meat. This is the next iteration of that. Do we need that? And especially in New Zealand, where they have lots of naturally growing fruit, do they need that? Why are they doing that? We're going to talk about that in a second. But first,
yes, we've got more news to get to in a second. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Lear Capital, because as many as you know, from time to time, I bring on our friend Kevin DeMeritt, the founder of Lear Capital, to show you the valuable insight that he has as to what's happening in our global economies right now. And recently, Kevin provided insight onto why so many countries led by the BRICS nations plan to move out from the U.S. dollar, create a gold-backed currency, and what that could mean to the value of your savings and retirement account. I strongly recommend that you call Lear Capital, go to LearRedacted.com, and get a free copy of what they're calling the Tipping Point Report. It's a totally free report that'll help explain to you and how to protect your retirement and savings account with gold and silver. And of course, we're also big fans of real estate. So gold, silver, real estate. And it's just a piece of education material for you guys to check out. So it's absolutely great. It's only a matter of time until we're forced to use digital currency. So you need to get educated quickly to preserve the wealth that you already have. For the past few years, Natalie and I have been moving away from the US dollar and into hard assets like gold and silver and real estate. And we see the writing on the wall, and we need to protect ourselves and our family before it's too late. We were just talking to our mother-in-law at dinner tonight, and she said she just bought a whole bunch of silver as well. And because we see what's happening with the U.S. dollar, you know, we're not like looking for gold and silver to go up in price in large amounts, but it's a wealth preservation mechanism to protect yourself against inflation. Because if you got your money, you know, in a bank right now, in a savings account, it's losing value every day that it's in there. Bottom line. So call Lear Capital today, request their special report. It's called The Tipping Point. It's free information about the dollar, the economy, and what it could mean for your savings and retirement. Make sure you go to LearRedacted.com or call the 800 number, which is 1-800-613-3557. This report will open your eyes to what's coming. Again, the number is 1-800-613-3557. Go to LearRedacted.com.
Well, does it seem to you like our lives are pawns in a game of politics? It sure seems that way to me, especially when you get gas, when you pay bills, when you buy things at the grocery store, inflation, high interest rates, increasingly draconian rules in our social contract with our government. That is the theme of Carol Roth's new book, You Will Own Nothing, because she says this is intentional because all of this hands power to global elites. She has a lot to say on all of this, and she joins us to ring in. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always great to be with you, Natalie.
So I finished the book last week. Now I'm a fan of your books, having read two. Your first book, The War on Small Business,
actually,
I cannot recommend.
Second book.
Oh, okay. First book that I read. Sorry. I guess I have to catch up. Okay. I'm one behind. The War on Small Business, I thought, made an amazing case for how the government chose winners and losers during the pandemic, not based on science. One of the major cases you make in your book is that if you own nothing, they own you. Can you explain this? Because I think it's something we all should sort of crochet on a pillow and remind ourselves all the time so that we don't eventually live in the Hunger Games.
Sure. So, you know, for people who aren't familiar with my background, I am a recovering investment banker. I've been commentating on markets for a very long time. I've been advocating for wealth creation opportunities for more than a quarter of a century. And so there's one thing I know above all else is that if you want to create wealth, you have to have ownership. Wealth comes from owning assets, assets in particular that can store value or hopefully appreciate in value. That is how you gain wealth. It's not just from working, it's making sure that you have this ownership. And you can go throughout history, and while they tell you you might be quote unquote happy if you don't own anything, we can see that throughout history, the people who don't have ownership have been very unfree. They have been very unhappy. In many cases, they have starved to death or lost their lives. And so being able to have property and not only the wealth creation opportunities that come with it, but the sovereignty. You know, if you own your house, you can do whatever you want to do, you know, within legal limits. Obviously can't infringe on other people's rights, but, you know, within those parameters within your house. If you are renting from a corporate landlord, they get to dictate the terms by which you get to live. And the same goes on and on. If you don't have access to a car, you don't have that level of freedom, you are dependent on other people for your freedoms. And so it really, you know, is a mechanism to have ownership of you if you don't have the freedom and that sovereign, that personal sovereignty.
Now, you have a whole chapter against CBDCs or central bank digital currencies. You really emphasize owning real things, for instance, precious metals, because those have stood the test of time, things that you can trade for real things. And so this idea of central bank digital currency, what are some of the reasons you don't like it? And then you say we don't need it.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously having your wealth in a form factor that you can control, I think is very important for people to be thinking about, as we have seen the incredible manipulations that have gone on with currency, with the economy, and with sort of everything else in our lives. For people who aren't familiar with a central bank digital currency, that is a currency in a digital format that is issued by a central bank and or its corresponding government. And the unique factor of it is that it is fully centralized and completely transparent to them. And because it's digital, it has features like programmability and the ability to expire should the people who are putting it out into the world decide they want to do that. So it's not that the central banks don't have any control over our money. It's not that governments don't have any control over our money, because unfortunately they do. And the more that you leave it, you know, in that fiat currency that they control, you know, the more subject you are to that level of control. But the concept of a central bank digital currency, you know, that they can see every single transaction, you know, down to the dollar level, that digital dollar level, is absolutely frightening. Because whether it's, you know, under the guise of, hey, we need to control inflation, so instead of enacting monetary policy to change interest rates and the like, we're just going to shut off access to people's money. You know, that could be one way that goes about. Another one is, well, you know, we think that cows are bad for the environment, and so, you know, we're trying to be more green, and you've had too many burgers this month, so I'm sorry, Carol, you can't have that burger that you're trying to buy at McDonald's or whatever it is. And then even worse, you know, as we've seen the policing of speech on social platforms and the deplatforming of people across the world, you know, maybe we're having this conversation, Natalie, they don't like what we're talking about. So, you know, on a respective basis, the central banks and governments behind those digital currencies say, sorry, guys, you can't have access to that. And so that really does give up your freedom. If you are not able to transact, if you're not able to have a store of wealth and value and your ability to access what you have earned, this is money that you have gone out, put out your blood, sweat, and tears, or taken on risk to earn, and they are now going to come into the middle of that and say, no, we're going to control that next level of how you exchange and how you gain wealth. I mean, that would be the absolute, you know, the ultimate in financial tyranny and the absolute end of freedom. And so it's not one of those things that's hypothetical. I mean, that's what people need to understand. There are...
No, we saw it in Canada during the trucker convoy. Yeah, we don't like what you're doing, so we're taking your bank accounts.
And more than that, just in terms of the CBDC itself, you know, they've run pilot programs. The G7 put out their principles for retail-facing CBDCs. These aren't actions that you take on something that isn't being seriously considered, which is why we need to raise that red flag now and make sure that people stand up and do everything they can to prevent it if it's put in place, to not use it and not to be lured into the system, because they're going to put out that carrot to try to get people to convert over.
Right. Now, one of the things that you say is a big problem with the US government is their inability to be a responsible host, I guess, of global currency, and that economists warned about this with what's called the Triffin dilemma. That's fascinating, because maybe it shows how hard it would have been for any country. We don't have to feel so bad because this dilemma exists, right? It was always going to exist. France might have done the same thing. So can you explain how hard it is for the United States to both be looking out for the world and ourselves, how it's almost impossible and where it's leading us?
Well, so there are a couple things that are true. One is that holding the global reserve currency is not something that has happened on a, you know, forever basis. The United States has been in that position for about 80 years, but before the United States, it was the British, and before the British, it was the Dutch. So this is something that changes due to historical cycles, geopolitical cycles, but usually because the cycle within a country gets to the point where that particular country takes on too much debt, you know, allows their military to deteriorate, has infighting, and does all those things that implodes from the inside versus the outside. The Triffin dilemma comes from Robert Triffin, who is a noted economist. And as you said, you know, the conflict when you have the global reserve currency is that you have that as your country's currency, but everybody else is using it. So you're trying to keep, in our case, the US dollar stable for the domestic economy in the world. Now, you want to give them a pass and say, oh, that's very difficult. So, you know, maybe they're slogging through. But the dilemma is one versus the other. What the Fed and the U.S. government has done is neither. They have not kept the U.S. dollar stable for the domestic economy in the terms of the U.S. dollar does not buy the same thing at the grocery store that it did a couple years ago or, you know, 40 years ago or, you know, go back in time. So they haven't done a good job in maintaining that stability domestically. And they also have not done a good job of doing that on the international stage. So instead of favoring one over the other, they have amazingly managed to do neither. And I think that is where we can ding them as being, you know, derelict in terms of their duty to maintain the stability of the currency. And I mean, you can see in terms of having, you know, 15 years of massive central bank interference in the markets, you know, 9 years of zero interest rate policy and the delta, you know, making up very close to zero interest rate policy. I mean, that's just absolutely obscene. In the US, our public debt to GDP is around 120% right now. That's an emerging market balance sheet backed by the world's reserve currency that has kept us from having a traditional currency crisis. So, you know, I think it's very easy for them to be criticized for absolutely mismanaging and, you know, stepping away from their responsibilities and just doing a huge, horrible job that's transferred wealth from Main Street to Wall Street, even though we know it's a difficult thing for them to do what they need to do. They still have managed to mess up the cornerstone of what they could control.
Okay, so they get an F on both accounts.
Unfortunately, we do on the other side of it. We get an F because they get an F.
Right. I mean, your entire bit about Social Security as a Ponzi scheme is interesting because that's how it's going to affect us, because our leaders are borrowing from us, basically, in a way that is not protected. We don't know if we're ever going to see that again. I think it's really fascinating, your chapter about student loans. You say that this is a ploy to keep young people from building wealth from the get-go and be stuck with a lifetime of debt. Can you speak to this and explain how this is a common lie that we all accept, that all education is good and worth it and the more the better, and how this keeps young people from building wealth in a way that no previous generation has had?
Yeah, so the way that we look at education is very strange. So in many respects, education is priceless, and you should be a lifelong learner, and you should strive to continue to educate yourself. And it does, you know, when you make the investment in yourself, have a payoff depending on what you pay for it. In the United States in particular, what college has become is not necessarily about education. It's become about accreditation. And the reason people are going is not to be well-rounded in the classics and to be a person of the world. They are going because they think it's going to translate into more money and a more successful career for them. So that is an investment. And if you're going to make an investment, people should know that investments are not valuable at any price. If you overpay for the investment, you're never going to get a return on it. You may get a negative return. You could end up going bankrupt and the like. And so the same thing goes with the education system. And what we've had happen in the United States is absolutely disgusting. We have had the U.S. government nationalize a large part of the student lending business, and they have become the largest predatory lender in the country. They are transferring wealth from teenagers in many cases and very young people to colleges and their administrators. And they're doing this because there is no underwriting process. There is no differentiation based on what kind of education you're getting. And on the back end, because there's no underwriting, there is no bankruptcy process. So basically, young people who don't have the tools, which again, it's shameful since that we have government-run education, but they don't have the tools today to evaluate a return on investment in terms of what they're making with the education, are saddled with five, in some cases, six-figure loans that are never going to pay off for many of them for the kinds of degrees they're getting. There are certainly exceptions to the rule. You know, maybe if you go into high finance or engineering or whatnot, certain high earning careers, and also depending on where you go. You know, if you're going to an Ivy League school versus a state school, or if you're going to maybe a smaller school where you're not taking on as much money, there are some variations. But what we've seen overall is that college has grown. I think it's five times the GDP and eight times wages in terms of their cost to their outcome. So it's not like we can make the argument that, you know, oh, well, the increased cost of college, well, that's returning more money in terms of the GDP or it's boosting wages. It's not. It's far outpacing that, far outpacing inflation. It's just been a wholesale wealth transfer. And the idea that you go to, you know, some mediocre school and for 4 years it costs $320,000 and you're going to get a $60,000 job at the end of that, that math doesn't make sense in any universe. So we have a huge, huge problem that needs to be undone and readdressed, because when you then have that coming out into the workforce, your balance sheet is wrecked. How are you going to be able to buy a house and start a life and do those things to make sure that you do have that ownership? That was, by the way, the whole purpose of you going to college to begin with.
Right. Yeah, you had this shocking statistic about how college has become so much more expensive, but they're not investing in professors.
No.
They're investing in administrators.
Correct.
That are doing things like diversity programs. So that's what kids are paying more for, not necessarily a better education. There are so many other great chapters in Carol's book. For instance, you take the piss out of ESGs. We've done that on the show too. A lot of context about devaluing the US dollar. And yet this is not a partisan book. It's not one party's fault over the other. This is for all of us to get involved and solve. So I highly recommend the book. I want to say thank you for joining us to talk about it and come back another time, because it seems like our economy is not going to get better unless we all do something together.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. And we have to empower ourselves with the knowledge, because the elite may want you to own nothing, but I want you to own everything, Natalie. So we have to turn this around.
Great. All right. We sure will. One YouTube channel at a time.
That's right.
All right. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks. Have a great one.
So, and that's great because, thank you, Carol, that's great because, you know, for people that like to buy things and,
who now?
People who like to buy video games and who like to buy,
you have to, I don't
David
think she
and I,
means consumer goods.
Okay. But well, that's
she
an
means
investment.
Assets.
It is an asset.
Those are liabilities.
When I buy things for the studio that are, so I, you know, buy a cable, buy HDMI plugs, David and I are in the same camp where we have to, you know, got to keep it going.
Yep. Okay.
We definitely are.
I think, and I think by she meant, I want you to own everything. She didn't mean me. She meant the collective you.
Yeah.
Right.
I had a friend who told me his wife hates when he says he's going to have a conversation with me because every time he talks to me, he spends money.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
All right. We've got more news to get to here. We're going to talk about Bill Gates and lab grown fruit. Bill Gates, you know, that produce coating chemical that he's created. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about what's going on in Canada, because the Freedom Convoy, you know, it's been about a year and a half since the Freedom Convoy, the truckers in Canada, inspired everyone. And David Creighton has been at the trial for Tamara Litch, who is there, as well as Chris Barber, who are now facing, they could face jail time for being involved, of course, in the trucker convoy. And that trial has started, and we're going to bring you an update on what is happening in Ottawa, Canada, around the trucker convoy.
All right, but first, how is this for a dystopic future? You could soon be eating lab-grown fruit as a side to your lab-grown meat. And said fruit could be sprayed with Bill Gates' produce coating chemical on it. So there are two things here that we're going to tell you about. One, that lab-grown fruit is a thing. Doesn't roll off the tug. Lab-grown fruit.
Doesn't grow off the tug.
Doesn't
the tug,
roll
the
off the tongue. You try
lab,
saying it.
Bill Gates.
Lab-grown fruit.
Lab-grown fruit.
Hot on the heels of lab-grown meat.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Clayton still has trouble with emergency use authorization.
So. Yes.
Oh, I can't say that.
And
emergency
you have trouble
use.
With nuclear.
Yeah, we all have our... Let us know in the chat room. Hey, none of us are perfect. Let us know in the chat room, is there a phrase that you screw up on a regular basis? Because yes, emergency use authorization, unless I take it very, very slowly, uh-huh. I can't say it. That's fine.
All right, well, I'm going to struggle through this one about lab-grown fruit.
Yeah.
Bill it Gates shouldn't is, be a thing.
Bill
That's
Gates
not my
lab-grown
fault.
Lab-grown fruit.
Okay, well, Bill Gates, you know, these two things could go hand in hand. We want to let you know that he has a company called Appeal that they say can make produce last for longer. It's a product that you spray on your produce and it acts like a plastic coating, but then you eat it. You don't scrub it off. They say it's totally safe. Of course they do. Here is CNBC giving them this free commercial. I'm going to just let it play for a little bit. You'll get the idea and then I'm going to stop it, but watch for a second, see what you think. That avocado. Okay. So he then goes on to say, yeah, like an avocado can last weeks. Avocados don't
anyway,
get started.
This is a CNBC, like basically like a commercial for Bill Gates. They love having Bill Gates on their air on a regular basis. Anytime they get a chance to have him on and interview him.
Like, I appreciate you stopping me on the tangent about avocados.
Yeah.
Because you know that where I was going. Okay. So yes, food spoilage is bad. And it's estimated that 30% of the world's food gets thrown away. But is the solution to spray a chemical on your fruit? And what is it that we're agreeing to spray on our produce? It's basically seed oils. Look, this is from the website of Appeal. They're saying that it's plant-based material. Now, I guess because we all go crazy for the word plant-based these days, they think that that's kind of okay. They say it's purified mono and diglycerides derived from sustainably sourced non-GMO plant oils. So basically it's vegetable. It's like a Crisco or, you know, sunflower oil or safola oil or whatever it is. If you look at how it's produced, processed, they're saying, well, because it's so highly processed, you know, we remove allergens, we remove other impurities, we remove trans fats. So there's no trans fats. Okay. But I think nutritionists universally agree that seed oils are a terrible thing that we should not be eating. That's one of the reasons that even nutritionists say don't eat those Beyond Meat or Impossible Burger or what have you, because they are laden with seed oils. Seed oils is the new trans fat, the thing that nobody wants to eat. So will you take a healthy piece of produce and spray it with seed oils? I don't want to do that. I'd rather just buy my food in a more timely manner. But yes, I agree that food spoilage is a problem. I don't agree that this is a viable solution. Plus, they say that, you know, they are going to grow their own seed oils. So this is going to lead to deforestation. Look at what they say here. How do you source these material? Well, we farm it. So they're going to clear out farmland and grow seed oils. In fact, seed oils is responsible for more deforestation than most livestock farming. We've shown you those data before. And so you're going to deforest more, grow more things in order to put on the things you've already grown. That seems pretty wasteful, don't you think?
Yeah. And then Bill Gates wants to cut down all of these trees, like he announced, you know, this new plan. So we're going to deforest everything so we can plant more stuff.
So we can plant things for more seed oils so that you can eat imitation meat burgers and spray this stuff on your otherwise unspoiled. We're going to bastardize your fruit.
How do those
fruit,
two things
basically
go together? Like all these environmentalists who are like, hey, go out and plant a tree. You know, go plant a tree. Go plant a tree this weekend. You know, go out with a team of people. And this whole hillside has been ravaged by a wildfire. Go plant a tree. And then Bill Gates wants to come and tear them all down so he can plant stuff to make seed oils with.
So you'll have a double down diet of seed oils because he doesn't want you to eat meat. So you're eating a patty that's stuffed with seed oils. The bun usually has seed oils. There's seed oils in your condiments. And then your produce side, whether if it's salad or tomatoes or what have you, are going to also be sprayed with a coating of seed oils to make them last longer. I want nothing to do with this. You decide how you feel about it. This is not my nutritional philosophy in life. But if CNBC is giving a commercial without any tough questions, why should we take... We definitely should take this as a sign that globalists like it. And they want this for our food source. And soon we'll be able to have a side dish or a fruit salad of lab-grown fruit or fruit adjacent is what I want to call it. Because they're saying they're not actually going to duplicate fruit. They're going to make things that they've grown that are fruit-like. We already have that. We have fruit roll-ups. Have you ever had a fruit roll-up?
That's fruit adjacent.
Yeah.
The other day we were at a market and there was like some food that was shaped like a fruit. Like, have you guys ever had, what is the candy that has the bananas in it? Runts. Did you guys ever eat Runts as a kid? My friend Ben and I used to go to the arcade. We'd go to the candy store. We'd buy Runts and I used to love the banana ones.
You're so weird. Nobody eats the banana Runts.
I always thought, I love those.
They do. I did.
Thought they were bananas.
There's actually, I've seen the little quarter op machines, the little candy dispenser machines that are just filled with banana Runts, and those are the absolute best machines on. Yeah.
Where is that machine?
You're blowing my mind.
I want that machine.
I would need one in the studio. Sort those out and get rid of them.
This is kind of like the fake fruit. It seems like the same thing, like a fake fruit, like that we're going to start.
Well, you know, I'm going to say
square apples and round bananas.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I would rather eat Runts and fruit roll ups than this lab-grown fruit, and we're going to get to that in a second, because scientists in New Zealand are now working to grow fruit tissue from plant cells that they hope will be just as tasty as fruit from a tree. This is from a company called Plant and Food Research, and they are government-owned and funded. So basically, this is their like promo video that's on their website here. I'm going to just let you see that they think that like, oh, look at us. We're growing fruit in a petri dish. This is so awesome. So basically, the entire country of New Zealand is funding lab-grown fruit projects. And in fact...
Wait.
Yeah?
I was going to say, wait until we get the gain-of-function fruit, right?
Gain-of-function fruit. I guess because they're showing us fish that they're also looking at lab-grown fish. We already know that lab-grown meat is a pet project of globalists around the world. And in fact, they may not be trying to necessarily recreate an apple, but create a new type of fruit that you might like and eat. Look at this from one of the lab technicians, the lead scientist, saying they've already done stem cell research cell harvesting from blueberries, apples, cherries, feijoas, peaches, nectarines, and grapes. But much like lab-grown meats, the challenge is to create an end product that's nutritious and has a taste, texture, and appearance that consumers are familiar with. He says, in order to grow a piece of food that's desirable to eat, we will need more than just a collection of cells. So we're investigating approaches that are likely to deliver a fresh food eating experience. The aim isn't to try to replicate a piece of fruit that's grown in the traditional way, but rather create a new food with equally appealing properties. So fruit flavored fruit. Or I don't know. I can't come up with some
fruit flavored fruit.
Fruit flavored, not fruit.
For it to have like the energy needs that you would need out of fruit, because I mean that's basically like, you know, you convert sun energy into sugars. That's basically how the energy system works. Where are they getting that energy to add to this fruit? Are they just like growing fruit, mulching up fruit, regrowing the fruit, and then like what?
So like, many questions.
You know what I hear? I hear a better like fruit flavored mRNA. That's where my head goes.
Okay. Yeah.
That'll protect you.
It'll be a delivery. Yeah, it'll be a delivery method for things that they've like, well, we can't give it to them this way. But if we make these hybrids of these fruits, we can sneak stuff in there and they'll never know because it'll taste like a banana.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why you have these organic farmers saying, you know, to make sure that they do not have mRNA in their cattle, et cetera, you know, to make sure that that stuff is kept away from them.
Right. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Encino Man, where he goes to the 7-Eleven and he gets like the fruit candy and he calls it the fruit group. Like, right. Oh, this is a meat group is a frozen burrito. fruit group is like sour straws. Like, that's what we're doing here. Okay. This same scientist spoke to The Guardian and said, here in New Zealand, we're good at growing conventional horticultural crops. But looking at the future, there's a lot of change coming in the world with population growth, increasing urbanization and climate change. So that piqued my interest, because climate change, you say you want to do this because it would be better for the environment or easier. Okay, well, they might want to look into this study that we talked about just a few months ago, showing that lab-grown meat has a higher carbon footprint than traditional livestock farmed meat. Researchers at UC Davis found that what is called ACBM, or animal cell-based meat, ACBM. I'm just going to call it lab-grown meat. None of it rolls off the tongue. Anyway, it's much worse for the environment than traditional meat, because this is how it's made. You think that this looks like a better plan than having a cow on the field? Okay. Here's what they concluded about cell-based meat or lab-grown meat. The results indicate that the environmental impact of near-term ACBM production is likely to be orders of magnitude higher than median beef production if a highly refined growth medium is utilized for lab-grown production. So yikes, the UC Davis researchers found that lab meat could increase global warming between 4 and 25 times more than retail beef. So when you look at that chart, can we put that chart back on and we think like, well, you know, there'd be a similar like beaker type test tube way of making lab-grown fruit as the way that we're making lab-grown meat. It's got to go through all of this. Of course, this is not going to be better for the planet than a tree, an apple tree or a cherry tree, right? Clearly this, like, yeah. Who's thinking this is better? And you know, it's interesting because we all buy into this BS because we know that meat is so demonized. We're told that it's not good for you. We're told that it's bad for the planet, all yada, 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 right? We haven't really seen demonization of fruit yet, as in we should not be eating that. And so this lab-grown alternative is here for you, and Bill Gates is going to spray it with his appeal. Yet. So be on the lookout for that, if that narrative pops up, that you shouldn't be eating fruit. I mean, a little bit it is. Like, Meghan Markle is an elitist because she eats... Right, this was the whole thing about her on Oprah, because she wants an avocado per day. And so that makes her a bad person, because avocados are like the blood diamond of Mexico. So a little bit we see some demonization of fruit, but maybe not to the extent that we're about to see, because there is a lab-grown alternative they want to push on us. So eat fruit while you can, because it looks like we're getting fruit adjacent.
Yes.
Well, as long as they pack it full of glucose, the Americans will love it. So
that's right.
I suppose.
That's right. Full of sugar, and they'll be happy about it.
And that's the thing I was getting at, is like, there's so many processes out of like the natural growth of fruit where it's like, you know, you're getting like amino acids being created. Like, is lab grown fruit going to do that? Or are they going to have to inject the, like, where are they going to get the things that they have to inject in there? Because it's not just cells with sugar in it. It's there's actual, like,
that's what if
other things in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you look at that diagram, there was a little tub for amino acids and a little tub for glucose, like that was being put in there.
You're right. It is there, but that's in the meat. This is the meat diagram.
There's glucose going in meat?
Yeah, but they because that's what energy is in the food cycle. It's basically just sugars. And right. So like they're going to have to be getting these nutrients from somewhere, because you can't naturally, they're not going to be in a lab creating nutrients. They're going to be in there like individually building amino acids. So like they're going to have to get this stuff from somewhere, and they're going to have to get it from fruit. So then it's just like fruit with more steps.
Like, right, exactly. We're going to take real fruit and highly process it into a fake fruit, and it'll have 80 ingredients like the Forever or the Impossible burgers. When you'd be better off actually eating a real burger.
Or picking an apple from a tree.
I'd be happier with this if they just said, we just wanted to see if we could do it. Then I'd be like, bam, go science.
Yeah.
But like when they're like, we're trying to solve the world's problems. Like, you're not. You know you're not. You're creating more problems.
The impossible banana.
I want to know. Yeah.
Can you imagine these people come home from work and like, we're almost there, honey. We almost got a blueberry, you know, yeah. or ish. Like, and this is gonna save the world. And you're like, no.
Honey, they're like, honey, how did you make that blueberry? Well, you know where we made this blueberry? From crushed up other blueberries.
Right.
Like, well, honey, glad you were gone all day. Okay. I folded the laundry while you were doing something really important.
We got it down to, it only takes 3 blueberries to make 1 blueberry. Now we're getting close.
All right, maybe we're missing something. I don't know. You know, we're watching this lab-grown production being pushed out in front of us. If you think that we're missing something, let us know. And if you are A-okay with eating lab-grown food, I mean, what's that much? I guess it's not that much different from like a sour straw or a fruit roll-up. That's lab.
It's not real food, though. It's like
lab-made food.
You're eating this as like a fun little treat because you're at the arcade with your friends when you're 12 years old. I'm talking about myself.
Right. So no one's thinking that like, oh, this is better.
This is
people should just eat sour straws.
Wake up in the morning and have Runts for breakfast, or you know, or Skittles.
Yeah.
Because it's shaped like a fruit.
I ate sour straws almost every day in college. I just loved them. So you know,
I used to buy big bags, the big plastic bag of Runts. And would pick through and just try to eat the bananas. And I have so many people here in the chat right now that are saying, yes, the banana runs. The way to go. You are my people.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, so have you tried banana high chews?
No. What is that?
Oh, yeah. Try a banana high chew.
That's where you want to be.
Okay.
You can order them on Amazon. Order them. But I was just going to say, like, look at all of the vegan foods that have tried to mimic like real foods, like vegan cheese, vegan meat, and all this stuff. And it's just like, I'm always like, anytime I've ever taken a bite of any of that stuff, I'm just like, ah, I mean, I can kind of see it's there, but like, I just can't imagine them being able to recreate the, like a strawberry, like a strawberry right out of the garden is just so juicy. And like, how could they think that they could replicate that?
Yeah. This is me in the grocery store. I'll pick up like vegan butter and I'm like, okay, what's in it? And I'm like, ah, you guys, you see what?
Yeah. Look at the 50 ingredients on this vegan butter. It's like all sorts of seed oil and stuff that's going to give you cancer. Uh-huh. And like, it's so awful for you. Yes, eat real foods. Eat real foods, real meat. I mean, yeah. And
real fruit while you can get it.
And we are big fans in this family of the carnivore code, eating basically the carnivore diet and eating very healthy meats. And really trying to like limit that. So yeah.
Did you know, I'm going to share a fun fact no one asked me for, but that human teeth started to become misaligned when the Chinese invented utensils, and we are literally supposed to put our teeth in, like in even museums, you can see that prehistoric man that just like ate their food like that, kept their teeth in alignment.
Grab a drumstick of chicken and just eat it.
And had perfect, my orthodontist was talking about this recently, and I've read it in several books before. So my daughter, my youngest, is losing her front teeth, and I'm like, we have to eat more like food without utensils now as her teeth come in because it will help the alignment. And so tonight we had ribs. Next week we're having roast chicken.
Yeah.
Like things, I would literally want her to do that as her front teeth are coming in for that reason.
And our oldest daughter has like perfectly straight teeth because I always would joke with her, she would never use utensils. I'm like, Ava, what are you doing? And she's like grabbing a chicken bone. She's like, what, Daddy? And she's like,
she'll eat like rice.
She eats
her,
like a barbarian. She eats like a cave woman.
But she has perfect teeth. Yeah. Yeah, it's, and this is documented. Anthropologists have
documented
this before.
Science.
Yeah.
I'm throwing out all my utensils. They're gone.
Yes. Do you really have that many anyway?
It is amazing. No, yeah, do the research. So it's pretty crazy about it. But yeah, it's true. All right. We've got more news to get to. We're going to cover Canada, and then we'll get you out of here so you can go eat some meat and hang out for the rest of the night. But first, we want to tell you, before we get to Canada and David Craden's report on the trucker convoy, we want to tell you about what's happening with, am I doing this right?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're going to talk to you about bio optimizers because if you have problems sleeping, you can sleep better, faster, and deeper with this new product. Now, this is something that we do often because we have a dog that likes to bark at the moon every time there's a full moon, the dog goes nuts, wakes us up, tries to leave the house, and then we can't get back to sleep. So one of the things we really do rely on is magnesium to get back to sleep because it's a natural sleep sleep aid, and then you don't feel groggy in the morning. So Magnesium Breakthrough is a great way to have that if you have problems sleeping. Unlike other magnesium supplements that might be giving you one or two forms of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough contains all seven forms of magnesium designed to help calm your mind and help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Clayton and I tried like a drugstore sleep aid not too long ago, a couple months ago. We were groggy the whole weekend. This is not what happens to you when you use magnesium. Over 75% of the population is magnesium deficient. And what most people know is that if they're taking magnesium, they're still deficient because they're not getting all seven forms. So don't miss out on the most relaxing sleep ever with Magnesium Breakthrough. For an exclusive offer, our listeners can go to magbreakthrough.com/redacted. Use promo code redacted during checkout and save 10%. So again, that's an exclusive offer just for our listeners. You go to magbreakthrough.com/redacted. Use promo code redacted.
So Sedan in our chat says, it's been a year and a half since the truckers in Ottawa, Canada showed the world what it's like to stand up to tyranny, stand up to the Trudeau government, inspired similar trucker convoys around the world, standing up to COVID tyranny and government overreach. And two of the leading faces of that convoy in Canada, Tamara Litch and Chris Barber, just began their trial this week. It resumes today. David Craden, journalist for the Human Events and Post Millennium, and has his own YouTube channel, Craden's Right, is in the courtroom covering this trial. And we had a chance to catch up with David. Great to see you, David.
Nice to be back, Clayton.
So this is a remarkable court appearance for these two. I mean, because the way that I've read some of these charges, it seemed like commit mischief, intimidation, obstructing police is what they're charging them with, that this in many ways would be sort of treated almost like a traffic ticket. But instead, 16 days in a courtroom and they could face jail time as a result of this.
And that's precisely the point I'd like to make today, Clayton, is that the authorities on a municipal, provincial, and federal level have put so much time and energy and money into prosecuting two people who merely came to Ottawa to peacefully protest. There were no guns, there were no explosives, there were no threats. It was the Ottawa and provincial police that threatened them. And literally at one point, a horse rode over a woman in a walker. Now that's a threat. That's violence. There was no violence in this protest, and yet they're bringing up charges that are so ridiculous. Mischief. Well, that's usually something when somebody comes home drunk, and it's usually resolved very quickly. But however, they have laid four charges that could actually add up to some time in jail here. And this is outrageous, but what it really means, and all it really means, is that Tamara Litch and Chris Barber are political dissidents. And I find this to be embarrassing because right now Canada is being watched by a lot of countries in the world, including our own and the United States, which is covering this quite closely. And we look like a dictatorship. We look like we're putting people on trial, not for crimes, not for terrorist activities, but because they merely opposed Justin Trudeau's COVID-19 mandates, which meant that you couldn't work if you didn't get vaccinated. And that's what they were fighting about. That's what they were protesting. And this is no different than the Soviet Union putting Solzhenitsyn on trial for being opposed to the Soviet Union. These people were opposed to Justin Trudeau's policies. That's all this was about, and that's all this is about this week and for the next 3 weeks.
Well, you said that the United States, you know, in comparison to Canada, might look more like a democracy now, comparing it to a dictatorship, but just remind you of what happened on January 6th, of course, and the tyranny, the people that are behind bars, thrown away without any sort of, seemed like due process, weren't able to be released on bail, being held in solitary confinement for things that should have been given like misdemeanors or nothing. And so that's where we're at with these tyrannical governments now, throwing people in prison. Now, I know Tamara Litch, she was held in prison a couple of times, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was in jail for the first time without bail for about 21 days. She was finally released on bail on a judge's order. She attended a free speech awards dinner in Alberta. The police arrested her for attending that dinner, flew her back to Ottawa and put her back into jail. She was there for another 30 days without bail until again she was released. But I talked to Tamara about this. I've interviewed her a number of times and I said, how did you feel? What kept you going? Because she literally didn't know what was going to happen to her because they wouldn't tell her. And she didn't even know at that point what she was going to be charged with, except opposing the Trudeau government. And she just said she did a lot of praying, a lot of thinking, a lot of meditating, and she got through it. And I wrote the other day, I said, this woman is so courageous because she went through this and she had no idea. The worst thing about a criminal offense and going through the justice system is not knowing what's at the other end. And she was never given all the facts. She was never given all the information. And it's the same with Chris Barber. I mean, this is a trucker who decided he couldn't take the vaccination because he believed it was harmful to him. But he couldn't work because of that. He couldn't cross the border. He had to take that vaccine. He just said enough. And, you know, you've been covering this hysteria that's going on right now about the return to these COVID-19 mandates. I don't think this trial could be at a more timely time because right now we've got the Ottawa Hospital going back to mask mandates.
Oh, geez.
We've got people screaming to bring back the lockdowns and the mandates again because we're on the cusp of another COVID outbreak. And it's all BS. We know it's all BS. And we know, and the same thing's happening with Joe Biden. His wife is sick. Therefore, we all got to mask up. The same thing is happening in Canada again. And I'm just waiting for these people, these same healthcare Gestapo people to come down and say, everybody put on a mask. Everybody lock down because COVID's back.
You know it's coming. You know it's already coming. So you're in this courtroom. Just take me behind the scenes of what we're seeing now with this judge and the witnesses. So we were talking earlier, but it looks like they're going to have 26 witnesses. The Trudeau government is going to bring out 26 witnesses against these people. And what were one of the first things that you reported on was about being called an occupation. The lawyers for Tamara Litch and Chris Barber on Tuesday said they would not tolerate being the Freedom Convoy being labeled in these court proceedings as an occupation. What was their reasons for that?
Well, as Lawrence Greenspan, a very distinguished lawyer who's representing Tamara Litch, told me, he said, this is not just hyperbole and unnecessary, it's ridiculous. And they love to call it an occupation because what is the connotation of that? Well, you think of the Germans occupying Paris, and is there any similarity here? Not at all. In fact, when I tweeted the other day, or I say posted on X now, I got a response from somebody who said, talk to my grandfather who lived through the Nazis occupying Warsaw. And he showed me a picture of the Germans rounding up Jews. And that's an occupation. People coming to protest in Ottawa is not an occupation. I was there for the 2.5 weeks every day. I was out there in those frigid February temperatures. And all of the stories concocted about the Freedom Convoy setting fires to apartment buildings, totally false. Defecating and urinating on the streets, completely ridiculous. Leaving garbage everywhere. The whole thing was manufactured. Businesses had the complete freedom to stay open. And those that did stay open made a lot of money. I have never seen Ottawa cleaner, actually, than during the Freedom Convoy. They cleaned up after themselves. They provided their own food. And they lived in a very civil manner while they were here. They were not honking horns all night long. This is, once again, this is all artificial, manufactured information, largely from the Trudeau government, but also from the local Ottawa mayor, who was in hysterics every time he saw children in bouncy castles, which the truckers had set up for their kids to play with while they were there. He hated that. He said, why are these people not taking this demonstration seriously? I used to laugh because he came totally unhinged. The people who were unhinged during the Freedom Convoy and the ones who are becoming unhinged right now, during a trial are the federal, provincial, and municipal authorities who set this whole thing up.
What's been the most surprising thing in the courtroom to you?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm surprised at the judge, because as I've reported oftentimes, every time a judge or a justice is set up to oversee anything involved with Freedom Convoy, the Emergencies Act declaration, COVID-19 mandates, there's always something a little bit suspicious about that judge's background. Now, this judge has been exceedingly fair so far. Yesterday, I watched her dismiss an email that the prosecution wanted to bring up while they were interviewing a Ottawa Police Service inspector. And the judge said, did he write that email? And the prosecution said, no, he did not. And she said, why are you introducing this as evidence then, if he did not write that email? Now, that to me was a sign that she's not going to be brought down by the propaganda and by the pressure she's, I'm sure, feeling from a lot of powerful people in this city, in this province, and in this country. And I, from what I've seen so far, I think this is a fair judge who's going to adjudicate objectively.
What's next in the trial?
We're going to hear testimony from police for the next few days. I'm back tomorrow. But what's going to be very interesting is the testimony from so-called local residents that have been dug up by the prosecution to attest to how horrible life was during the occupation. So this is going to be interesting, because a lot of these people have never told their story the same way when interviewed over at different times. And there's one woman who I'm very interested to hear, because she's bringing a class action suit against the Freedom Convoy. And I've heard some very interesting things about her dual citizenship. I can't comment further on that right now, but I think next week when she appears on Wednesday, this is going to be world news, because the prosecution perhaps should have suggested this individual not appear because she could be a liability to their prosecution. But I think she's going to be a boon to the defense.
Interesting. Well, we will cover it. We'll have you back as this trial unfolds. David Craden, reporting at the courthouse or during the courthouse over the next 16 days in this very interesting Freedom Convoy trial in Canada. Thank you so much, David. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Clayton.
And I just want to say thanks to all of you for subscribing and being a part of our great community here. We put up a poll last night on the channel, and almost 60,000 of you responded in the poll, which is really, really amazing. So thank you so much for your engagement, seeking the truth alongside of us. We don't have all of the answers here, but we certainly are going to question everything. That is the goal of this show. And so thank you so much for subscribing to the show, turning on that bell notification so you get a notification when we go live, at least on YouTube. I don't exactly know how Rumble is doing it these days with notifications. I think they're getting better at it. But when you subscribe on Rumble, let us know actually in the Rumble chat. Like, do you guys get notifications now with Rumble? I know they were adding some things, so let's hope that that's the case. But either way, wherever you subscribe, we really, really appreciate it. We'll have content, very special content, this weekend coming out. We want you all to make sure that you're subscribed to our Rumble channel specifically, because we have our big new documentary that's about to unfold on 9/11. So please subscribe. Make sure you're subscribed so you can see that and get exclusive access to that before anyone else gets to see it on YouTube. In fact, there's going to be a sort of a censored version that's going to go out on YouTube, unfortunately, but there's things that we simply can't show you, so you won't get to see the full experience on YouTube. So please make sure you're subscribed to our Rumble channel. It's just rumble.com/redacted, and you'll be able to see that documentary on 9/11. So guys, thank you so much for joining us this week. Much love to all of you, and we'll see you back here on Monday live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great weekend, everyone.